All the Reds need is a friend, a big Geordie ponytail friend called Andy. It's the Day Trippers. On tonight's show, we're joined by a triumvirate of pod debutants, as Cy Campbell, a.k.a. Phantom Goal on Twitter, and writer extraordinaire Jim Fishlock join us on the line, whilst Mark Keeley braves the bunker. We'll be looking at Monday night's heartbreaking madness and throwing an eye towards the last day of the season, before finishing, as we do, with your listeners' questions. Right, so let's just bite the bullet and get into the madness that was last night's 3-3 away draw at Crystal Palace. The mood in the wake of the result, both on the pitch and in the wider world, was one of utter desolation. And yet Liverpool had taken a point to go top of the league with a game remaining. The sentiment, however, was a mixture of heartbreak, anger and confusion. 24 hours later, how are we feeling? Before we pick the bones out of another 30 batshit match, isn't it fair to say that this season's already delivered more than any of us here really dared to dream at the start? And the fact that we go into the last day with a slim chance of being champions is pretty remarkable achievement, is it not, Andy Young?
Yeah, of course, it's amazing. And like, we'd have taken it at the start. We'd have taken it at Christmas when we were top. Yeah, given that opportunity to play the last game of the season. Watching another result. I mean, I don't know how far you have to go back for Liverpool fans to experience that.
Yeah.
Against Arsenal in 89, you had the two teams in the park. How far do you have to go back where you had that experience like United and City did a few seasons ago? And you're, you know, watching things like that happen over the last few years, you're jealous that it's not your club. And you're looking at the crowd like and the cameras panning around and looking at people with earphones on, and it's amazing. And I'm absolutely buzzing for Sunday, despite what happens, you know, with City. Let's see what happens on Wednesday, because Wednesday night we could be back in the driving seat.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good point. Si, would you agree with that? That basically, maybe there's more than a slight overreaction to the result last night.
Yeah, I think it's kind of telling that people were so upset about it. Whenever, you know, I don't think anyone can really say they've been let down by this team this season. You know, as I said, you know, before going to the start of the season, if you told us that we'd be in with a chance of winning the league on the last day of the season, then that would have, you know, gone past anyone's imaginations. You know, top four Champions League was always the goal, and even then we thought that would be an incredible achievement for this season. So to even, you know, get into this kind of running is incredible. You know, it's not a bottle job. Nobody's let anyone down this season. And all it is going from strength to strength. Hopefully next season we can build on it. But yeah, I think the reaction, you know, when you saw Glenn Johnson on Twitter kind of getting a bit riled up, obviously, you know, it got the impression that people were maybe sending him abuse directly towards him, which is out of order completely. You know, as much as players maybe made mistakes, you know, you don't go directly to them and send them abuse. You know, I mean, that's not, I mean, they're still human beings, they're still professional footballers. You know, they were as gutted as we were yesterday. So you know, I think that's unfair.
And in the bigger scheme of things, so would you agree that, like, I mean, basically, okay, it's not the ideal scenario, but we're still in with almost the same shit as we were. We still need City to fuck up. If they do, we're still in.
Yeah, we still need a kind of a big, you know, thing of fortune to go our way. So all it does is that it just means that the fortune that we need is just a little bit more. I mean, ultimately, I think a lot of our hopes maybe are being pinned on, you know, these kind of strange players like Andy Vyman or Andy Carroll, these players who could do something for us. So. Yeah. So again, I don't think that changes necessarily anything. And you know, to say that it's over is crazy, because, you know, it was crazy to say it was over 3 weeks ago, whenever we were 5 points clear, and it's crazy to say it's over now, because City have games in hand, but as they've shown earlier in the season, games in hand don't mean points in the bag. Hopefully the same goes this week.
Very well put indeed. Jim, would you concur? How's your optimism levels going into the weekend and looking at tomorrow evening's game?
Well, 5 minutes after the game last night, obviously, I wasn't very optimistic, but I tried my best to be optimistic, you know, as much as I can. And I think taking the season as a whole, and if you go back to sort of January 2013 up until now, I mean, it's just been an incredible growth by the team. And I personally, at the start of the season, didn't think we would reach the top four. I thought we'd finish fifth, but give it a good run. And like, you know, Simon and Andy have said, we're 1 point ahead of, you know, everybody else with one game left to go. You know, we were seventh last season. It's just an incredible, incredible achievement. And I hope, you know, we'll be there on Sunday, and I hope the streets are absolutely ram-jammed with every single person who has ever thought anything of the Liverpool Football Club, cheering that coach in, because, yeah, some of them may well have back in love with football, back in love with watching Liverpool. It's been extraordinary, really, to see where we've come in such a small period of time. A lot of the two guys have said, you know, it's only going to go on from this. We can only go one way. And if we've only got to go from second to first, well, we've gone from seventh to second in one season, worst case scenario. So if next season all we've got to do is go from second to first, you know, you've got to look at it that way, really. We're one place off winning the league again.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a very simple kind of a logic to follow. Mark, there's an awful lot of chit-chat talked about the fact that this is our best chance ever and all that. There's an awful lot of fatalism and talking about how if we didn't grab this chance, blah, blah, blah. Do you buy into that, or would you be like Jim thinking, you know, the next step is just to consolidate?
Exactly. And this is what being a football fan is all about. Coming into the last game of a season, being in with a chance of still winning the league. Hmm. And it's the highs and the lows. It's everything that goes with it. And what this team has produced this year, you can only feel nothing but pride as being a Liverpool fan, the fact that we're still in it. But I remember all my... some of my favourite moments of being a football fan as a kid. One was thinking back to the 89 one, it was gutting, but it stands out for me much.
The drama of it.
Yeah. The last game of the season when Blackburn won at Anfield, it just stands out in the memory so much. And they're two, you could say, you know, they're not Liverpool wins, it's part of being what a football is about. And the fact is that this is the one where we're in with a chance of winning the league still.
Yeah, right at the death. Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that, you know, rather than elaborate on the idiocy, or whatever Andy was talking about, that's, you know, a lot of what was said after the game seemed to just forget that fact, you know?
Yeah.
And you still have to, you know, you can't just lie down. You know, it was a bit disappointing to see some of the players so upset. And maybe I was obviously hoping that Rodgers might have said, you know, this is still on after the game, that kind of stuff. But I suppose there, you know, Rodgers is probably thinking,
yeah, it might be
he's sending out a message or whatever, you know. But I thought, you know, them players need lifting, because, you know, one or two of them kind of looked a little bit burned out before the game as well, and that was
and they certainly did afterwards. Yeah. In fairness, Phil, is that an interesting point there about the response that we saw from the players on the pitch and from Rodgers afterwards, who seemed to concede the title?
Well, from a particularly dour and negative individual as myself, right, last night drags out the emotions at the end purely because of the disappointment that people feel. You know, there's going to be emotions are raised, there's tensions. You can actually see it between the fan base, between the fans. Normal, rational people going off and complete mad ones on Twitter, right? When you take a step back today and you think about it, I hate when somebody says, oh, you can't think back to last year, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry, we've been in the doldrums since 08-09, right? Mm. We couldn't finish top five in that space of time. We were continually praying for a run at Champions League. We were saying this year, let's hope that Brendan can get us within 3 points of the Champions League come the last game of the season, and we'll all be saying that's progression and we're happy with that because we're in with a chance. This team can win the league still. Can win the league still. There is no reason why they can't go on to win the league. We needed Manchester City to have a slip up anyway, regardless after the draw last night. We still needed Manchester City to have a slip up. So what's the difference in one goal? They lose 1-0 to Villa instead of drawing 1-0 with Villa. That's the difference we're talking about here. Then it's back in our hands. This league is still very much on. And I don't mind Brendan conceding the league, because what Brendan has done is he's taken the pressure off those players. For those players now go out on Sunday not worrying about chasing goals, which was probably something we'll come on to later, which was a fault in what happened in the actual play last night. But they go out now with just looking to win the game. For the supporters who have backed them right the way through this fantastic roller coaster ride of a season. Mm. And when we look back on this even if we don't win the league, we're going to remember this as a season which Liverpool restated itself in the top four. And not just in the top four, but as contenders for the league championship again. And, you know, I remember an article written by Dion Fanning after Rafa Benitez got the sack saying, you know, the Liverpool fans looked back at this as a golden time, right? Well, at this moment in time, with the age in the squad that we have, with the players that we have that are coming through, the inescapable fact that Brendan Rodgers is a fantastic coach. I'm not just talking about manager, I'm talking about in terms of what he can do with the players, that young players that come into his thing. This team has 6, 7, 8 years in front of itself. And unlike 08-09, when we sold off some of our crown jewels because the other Yanks were robbing the club blind to try to keep themselves in a nice little pension winner that they had, this time we're not selling off our best players. We're going to add to that squad. So that squad will be able to deal with Champions League next season and going again, whether we win the league or not. And I honestly, I said it to Andy earlier on, I feel that we're probably in a slightly... strangely enough, an easier way to win this league than before, where it was relying on a draw and then we hold our nerve and we do this and maybe we chase the goals. There were so many variables at play. Now it's, if Manchester City lose and we win, that's it. We're league champions. That's as plain and simple as you can get it.
Yeah.
And that's there's no other variables around. That's what it boils down to. There'll be no goal chase. There's just the fact we need one result. And I remember United losing the league when they went to West Ham and they lost 1-0 and they hit every fucking thing in the whole world that day. And Blackburn still managed to win the league despite losing to ourselves in Anfield. Yeah. Shit happens. Things happen on the last day of the season. They don't happen in the second last match of the season. The magic happens at the end. This is Istanbul. This is halftime in Istanbul. Yeah.
None of them seasons were as mad as this. This has been a crazy season already.
Yeah. This is halftime in Istanbul. We have to, we must, there's every chance that we can still win the league. So there's no point in being gloomy. No. Yeah, look, there was mourning that went on over, but let's face facts. One result, with one bad result for City, and we're back in the driving seat. Back in the driving seat, one game to go, and it's a cup final.
Yeah. Exactly, Phil. Like, and if things happened the way they're supposed to happen in football, we'd be all minted. We'd have the bookies cleared out.
Yeah.
So there's twists and turns in every title race. Have City had their twist?
Yeah,
probably not. We've had our twist and turn. Chelsea have had theirs. City haven't.
Yeah, and there's nothing delusional about thinking that something like that could happen. That's perfectly logical.
I don't think it's a delusion.
Absolutely. Well, look, having established the fact that we do have a little bit of life left in us and a bit of positivity left in us, we do need to go and actually look at the details of the match itself. And putting aside all the Twitter nonsense, if we were to look at the goals that we did concede, basically you could say that there was an awful lot of the usual suspects involved in terms of the concession of those goals. So let's start with the defence. We had Jamie Carragher and old Neville there having canaries last night about how deep Liverpool were defending, and in fairness they were right. It was quite mad to watch in the playback. Is this down to a lack of leadership, as I think Carragher was trying to shout, or is it a thing that's being coached, do you think, Jim?
Well, personally, I thought up until the first goal, you know, it was a great performance. I try and stay off Twitter during the games because there's all sorts of nonsense going on before, during, and after. So, you know, it's crazy on there. But I was going to tweet at one point, you know, oh, nice to see Glenn Johnson having a decent game for a change, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I didn't.
That was probably about 25 minutes out, Jim, wasn't it?
It was, about 25 minutes out, and I was sitting there thinking, well, fair play to him, you know.
Yeah.
And when he does play all right, he looks all right, but I'm glad I didn't. As I say, I would have had to delete my account and move country.
well, look, we
Fim Gishlock.
The first goal goes in, and you can watch all their faces. And I don't just mean the back four. I mean the midfielders. They all shit themselves. The crowd starts getting up. And it's just fucking carnage, isn't it? We've seen it. It's 9 minutes of absolute carnage. And they could have scored more than the three they did. I think, personally, as soon as that one goal goes in, Rodgers needs to be a slightly bit more proactive. I could see him chatting away to Pascoe and the other guy on the bench. And they made the change. Moses, me, I would have brought Agger on. I would have gone to three at the back again, which he has done in previous games to try and just close it down. But once that first goal goes in, you see the team as a whole shit themselves. Skirtle, his default when he's worried about what's going on is to just drop back and drop back and drop back until he's practically on top of Mignolet. There was a little bit of analysis they were doing on Sky last night, and they were talking about how deep they were, and it was Sacco and Skirtle in particular. But if you, they didn't mention it, but if you look just behind them, Mignolet is going absolutely bananas. He's waving his arms. He's screaming at them to get out, I would imagine, unless he's having some sort of funny turn. I don't know. But he's screaming at them to get out, and they're just not moving.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're asking for leadership. You're looking for Steven Gerrard. You're looking for... Luis Suarez, you're looking for Martin Skrtel and Sacco really to sort of, you know, put it on the line and say, right, lads, we got to fucking push up, because they only had the one guy who was going to go in behind them. And the one point Skrtel decides to step out is the worst point he could ever step out.
I know,
You know?
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's like he's thought, oh, hang on, fucking hell, 10 minutes, I haven't fucking stepped forward. Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just step forward now. Never mind leaving their guy standing on his own on the edge of the penalty box, you know? Yeah. It was just, well, we all know what it was. It was absolute carnage.
Yeah, fair enough. Simon Campbell, is it fair to say that this idea of them being deep, are we picking on that? Has it been that way all season? And like Andy said earlier on, is it something that when it does go against us that we focus in on? Or was it particularly bad last night, in your opinion?
I think it was particularly bad last night. I think we've had a few games where we've had to see it out, namely against Sunderland and West Ham and against Norwich, where we've just kind of gone balls to the wall and just held it down. And last night, it was just like the team just completely shit themselves. Mm. And, you know, whether or not that was because Rodgers should have brought on another defender, I understood the Moses substitution because it was to try and keep Bolasie, keep on top of Bolasie, because Bolasie was running riot at that stage in the game. So he brought on Moses because Moses has a bit of pace to try and hold him back, which did work. But then the problems weren't on our wings. The problems were really in the defence. And I think the problem was it was that, but then it was the playing deep combined with the fact that we still were going for goals rather than just sitting back. Because we were so desperate to get the goals, we were still, you know, like their second goal came from a corner. It was a counter attack. And, you know, we had like Martin Skrtel, obviously, who's our biggest threat off corners, but he was standing on the complete opposite end of the pitch that he should be.
Mm.
And I just feel like if we'd maybe taken the corner with, you know, rather than Gerrard taking corners, if we maybe taken it with Sterling or something who was taking a few corners and have Gerrard be a threat in the box and then keep Skrtel back, maybe that wouldn't have happened. Maybe if we just kind of held back a little bit and just kept a little bit more defensive, but still keep the way we normally play in terms of just trying to keep it tight. But I just think everything just went. It just kind of all the game plan just went out the window once their first goal went in. They went into overdrive and we just totally kind of all the wheels came off and we didn't really know what we were doing.
Yeah, that's and quite spectacularly so. Phil, that's a really good point Simon makes, is that we seem to be caught between two stools in terms of the plan. The plan was confused, to say the least, in that period of time when we needed it to be solid.
Last night in isolation, you look at it, and we had a plan up until, I think, Sterling goes off. I think for me, the big moment happens when Sterling goes off the pitch, because he was the one that was really linking a sort of a deep line defence to the two other boys in attack and whoever was going on with him. And when Coutinho came on, he didn't do it as effectively as Sterling has done it. And what Sterling has in his armoury is that he was able to pick it up 25 yards from goal and he was able to run. Now, at that point, I can understand why we're playing deep, because we're playing them on the counter and we're hoping to open up more spaces for the likes of Sturridge and Suarez to get in behind. And when you think about our second and third goals, it comes from that type of breakaway that we do and we get our goals from it. Now, Sterling goes off, Coutinho comes on, doesn't do it as well. There's that sort of a gap then opens up in the midfield between where Coutinho now is on Lucas' side, and then coming down the right hand side where they tend to get a bit of joy, because the counter attack off the corner comes in that direction as such. And then you've got with our defenders, with our centre halves playing in a deep line as such at that point. We lose our compactness, and the one thing, when we play our fast tempo aggressive sort of passing through centre midfield and the whole lot, the lads have to be fairly compact so that the passes can come off before they can hit a switch or hit a true ball or something like that. And if we're spread out the way we were, it just becomes very hard for us to do it. And in the poorer games that we had earlier in the season, we did seem very stretched, and that's the one thing, that for those last 20 minutes or so we were very stretched from top end to the back end. The leadership thing is interesting. You know, I'm a firm believer that there's a reason why very few teams ever go from seventh to winning the league, or go from fifth to winning the league, or fourth to winning the league. They tend to come runners up first before they actually win a league, because I think you have to learn how to go through the experience of being in these type of positions to know how to deal with them again, so that you don't sort of lose your way in games like this. You just eke out the result no matter what. And a bit more experience. I'd say if we played this game this time next year at 3-1, instead of us going chasing goals again, we just sit, we take the 3-1, we put it in our back pocket and we run away with it.
Maybe Brendan does.
Yeah.
Maybe Agger comes on and,
Potentially Agger comes on, or whatever way we do it. But I'm just looking at it saying, it's easy to get on. Like, I thought there was a bit too much focus on the centre-backs. I thought our full-backs for that last 20 minutes were particularly poor. And yeah, I know we're going to get on to them. Yeah, but I do genuinely think if you allow that amount of ball then to come towards your centre-backs, they look under more pressure. And their natural thing then is to come in tight and sit on top of the 18-yard box and try to deal with whatever comes with them. Going back to the point about Skirtle stepping in, that's one mistake. The second mistake is that when the play is being built up, Johnson's looking across at Skirtle and can see that there's two players on him. There's Gale, and they've put the big man up to try to get flick-ons, to try to get your man Gale around the back. If he reacts there's a chance that he can get across and cover the actual flick-on and either get a block or something that's on it. You know, there's all these little things keep building up all the time, and that can be the difference between you being champions and coming second place. Now, we could get, we've had such wonderful games, we've had such wonderful wins, we're still in a fantastic position. Like, to berate the team now on this type of defending, where we've done it at other points during the season and we've berated them then, really, we're going over old ground at this stage with probably the same players in doing the same things again.
We are, but not to go over old ground as such, Andy, but why is it a team that's so famed for their pressing and high tempo stuff allows, in the area where they really need to get close to the ball, allows such space, especially around the edge of our own 18-yard box? It's something that I can never really understand. I'm not talking about headlessly rushing to the man and then getting caught on a spin. I mean, closing the space. And, poor Cara's voice went up about 18 octaves last night crying about it. But it's true. It's a fair point. The space the guys had on the edge of our 18-yard box.
Yeah, it was. Like, look, Liverpool, like, Rodgers is an aggressive manager and he's a young manager. And I think as time goes on, he might kind of come back into himself and he learned from this season a lot. And that's the good thing, because he's not a stubborn bastard like Rafa was. You can see Rodgers learning all the time. They're not drilled defensively. We've seen that all season. They're not drilled defensively. It's all about possession football and the best way of defending is keeping the ball and whatever. Okay, we press well in midfield and we try and turn the ball over. But when the chips are down and we're like it was against us, and like it has been in a lot of games this season, or particularly recently, we do start to tend to crumble, or the lack of experience. And it would have just taken a defender coming on there, because it was very easy to see what was happening sitting on the bench, to see how it was developing.
Yeah.
The significant thing I noticed about, like, I don't mind deep defending when you're defending the lead, okay? I don't mind that. But as long as the midfield drop back with you and tighten the lines, it's schoolboy stuff if you allow oceans and oceans of space for players to not just flick balls on, but get on the ball and turn and get a chance to look up. Mm. Now, the way Rafa used to have us playing, or the way Mourinho has them playing, is tight lines. You can barely fit in the spaces that they allow between midfield and defence. So, whatever about defending deep, that's not really the root of it. It collectively, the team sort of just crumbled and they didn't really know quite what the communication and everything, and everyone's just shitting their pants.
And it is that philosophy you're talking about as well, though, isn't it? At 3-1, there was no thinking that, right, we need to shore up here. It's like, let's get fucking four or five more. Even still, when the third goal goes in, when Suarez scores, it's just grab the ball, put it under your jumper and let's get back to centre circle. Yeah. There's no celebrations. This team is mental, They just want to... They believe they could actually score 8 or 9. They actually did. It was mad.
Yeah, you can actually... Look, we have to admire them for that. It's brilliant. When your brain kicks in and it's not your heart dreaming of this turning around an impossible goal difference. Like, let's face it, if you had to put 6-7 past them and then you're relying on City to only win by one goal, then you want to beat Newcastle. It's a mental task.
Yeah.
Running or agar or whatever.
Yeah, fair enough. Mark, like we say, nobody's interested in any which ones here, but, we need to finish out this topic of the defence, and
we've touched on Glenn Johnson's performance, I guess, being maybe a little bit of what we've seen, the more negative side of it, at least over the year. Without hacking the back off the man, is he a fella that you see lining up for us next year?
I don't personally. I think I said it a while back. Remember the time he was out with some sort of injury. I don't know what the injury was. Nobody seemed to know what it was. Mm. I think that was related to something else. Because that's the way it seemed. That's his game had plummeted so badly. And I think you can talk all about, say, setting your defence up in the right way and stuff like that. The first goal is simple defending. It's just getting out to the ball.
Yeah.
He just doesn't react whatsoever. Mm. And I don't know, it's just hard to explain for a guy so experienced in that. He's been in that position before, he's won leagues before. Mm. And it's just one of them things, you can't legislate for it sometimes. Mm. The other thing I'd say as well, we went, I know you asked me about Johnson, but in terms of the defence, for the Palace second goal, we leave Flanagan back on his own for a corner. We just broke... Coutinho has a great chance to make a 4-1. Mm. It goes in suddenly. It's, you know, we're not talking about the second goal, but they actually leave Flanagan back on his own. We're winning 3-1, and you leave Flanagan back on his own. That in itself is a bit crazy in terms of how you set up, and it just showed that there was a mentality on the pitch. We're going for more. We're going for more. Mm. And I think that's probably sometimes where your manager comes in and say, "That's mental stuff. Leaving one man back on his own."
Yeah.
And that's where the second goal comes from.
Yeah.
So you can. I know on a lot of the analysis was based on how deep we were, but that's been kind of talked to death all season.
Yeah,
you know, we could have been talking about another 5-3 like Cardiff was, or you know, if one of them chances go. And I know we'll get onto the attack, but there was plenty of chances in the game as well.
Moving on to slightly more positive things, then with regards to our own performance on the day. The midfield, I suppose there's mixes here. People could say different things, but Joe Allen, your countryman, Jim, were you proud of the display he put in last night?
Yeah, well, I'm always singing his praises. I think he's brilliant. I thought last night was probably one of his best performances all round for us. He was dangerous going forward. When he's in possession, he's excellent. His strength when he's in possession or when he's trying to win it back. He's very, he's underrated in that regard. Mm. And also his energy levels. You know, people rave about Jordan Henderson, and rightly so, you know. But if you watch Joe Allen when he plays, he adds an awful lot to our game. So I think last night was just the perfect overall performance from him. Mm. It's just a pity, obviously, that the result didn't go, because if we stay winning that game and people, a 3-0 win or whatever it is, people are talking about that vital first goal. And for the smallest guy in the team to score a header from a corner against the Tony Pulis side takes some doing, really, I'm glad he's got the goal off his back now. It should stop people talking about the Everton miss. And I think he deserves a place in that team, and you fit everyone else around him. And I think last night, we're all starting to see that if he does get a good run and he's not injured and he keeps his place, how effective he is.
Yeah, Jim says that there's been an awful lot of fuss and fanfare about Jordan Henderson. He will walk straight back in, Phil, won't he?
Yeah, I didn't think Lucas had a particularly bad game last night. I don't think he had a particularly good game last night. I think the way the team has progressed and the type of football that we play is more so Lucas's biggest issue, because he needs to needs to get his head up to look around to see what's going on. If you look at the way Henderson and Allen play, they're very intuitive footballers. They're aware of what's going on around them on the actual pitch. So generally when the ball comes in, they're able to know that there's somebody either up their hole, or they can turn into space and how to turn into space, get a ball away quickly. They know where the next pass is going because they're aware of the movement that's going on around them. I don't feel that Lucas brings the same thing to the table, and that's not bashing the lad. That's just the style of player that he is. Mm-hmm. And I think if he moved on to somewhere in Italy or Spain, I think people would be saying, Jesus, Lucas is playing really well out there. You know what I mean? I just think, again, managers sign players to fit certain styles of teams, and Lucas really fit well into the Rafa team in 08-09 when he was there. And
does he like to have the game in front of him? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think he does, but I don't think you're going to move Gerrard out of the defensive midfield position, because I think Gerrard has proved in this Rodgers team that he's more effective in that defensive midfield position than Lucas is, because again, Gerrard is capable of knowing what's on, knowing where to go to next, not play the same ball repetitively in terms of who he's going to the whole lot and can open up the game.
How did he do last night, in your opinion?
I actually didn't think Gerrard had a particularly great game last night. I thought, you know, again, coming back to what we mentioned earlier on, we probably needed him there to maybe show a bit more of a cool head and tell the team, look, we don't need to chase this anymore, especially on the second goal. But this comes down to leadership. I'm not talking about actual performances. I thought he did okay. It wasn't one of his standout games. You know, when we were talking about the defence, he didn't give much of a screen over those last 20 minutes in terms of what was there. I think he himself went after the goals. I think the whole team went after. And Rodgers in his press conference afterwards said, you know, the going after the goals wasn't his primary motive in this actual game. He just wanted to get the 3 points on the boards. And sometimes teams can get caught up themselves in what they think they need to do as opposed to what they need to do. But while saying that, like, for 79 minutes, we're 3-0 up. We haven't done much wrong. We haven't done anything. No, but look,
I've just realised what you just said there.
But no, for 79 minutes, that team has done its job exactly the way you wanted to do it. Yeah. It's put them to the sword, and they've gone after goal. They've looked at it and probably sensed it, because let's be honest, Sturridge has hit the post. We've had another couple of close shaves in terms of goals. A
couple of great saves by Speroni.
Plays one over the post, the whole lot. And like you're saying to yourself, we could have been 5 or 6-0 up at that stage with the chances that we had. And it's natural that they probably feel the goals inside them because of the chances they've made. The real bit that we needed, the bit that we just needed, was a 3-1, just someone to say, fuck it, lads, let's take the 3-1. Let's take the 3-1. Yeah. And, you know, there's a collective responsibility there. It could come from Rodgers. He could, as we said, we could have changed things. But in terms of midfield performances, did they do particularly badly? No. Was the last 11 minutes horrific? Yes. But was that horrific particularly because of the midfield? No. Was some players more at fault than others? Yes. But are you going to hang them out over 11 minutes? Probably not. You know, everyone that's sitting here, we could have done an hour on the things that Glenn Johnson did wrong in that match, right?
We've done everything on Johnson that happened last night.
Yeah, but there's no point in going over it.
Yeah.
Everything we've done, absolutely everything, and it's repetitive with him. Mm. So it's pointless.
It's a point you made earlier on, Andy. Everything that was on display that was bad in those crazy minutes, we talked to death over the year. I think Mark said it as well.
Of course, we have.
There's nothing new there.
No, it's just consistent.
We needed to bring Colo on to calm everyone down. That's
exactly what I'm missing. the fucking Colo
talking
factor.
About leadership, and you're talking about cool heads. Yeah. Colo, that was the answer, lad.
But it wasn't a great performance, in my opinion. Overall, it was a game that was made a lot easier than I expected. I thought that we would have had a Palace team that was a little bit different to the Everton team that played City. Nothing really at stake for them, and I thought they would have. You would have seen the same Palace. You didn't see the same Palace. You seen holiday mode Palace for the whole game, and the only difference between how Everton approached City and how Palace approached us was the crowd.
Yeah.
And when the crowd gets behind you like that, it's
effective.
It's effective, and it got the players up for it. Like Everton, I love getting digs in, but the fans were
celebrating.
They were an absolute disgrace to their small family club. You know, they didn't really care. You know, look at the Palace fans where they're bouncing and bouncing and bouncing.
I haven't watched too many games
at Selhurst Park. Are they like that every week?
Well, I don't know, but that's bloody impressive.
That was impressive. That was like German football type of bouncing around, and the flags waving all through the game.
I've seen a couple of things today from lads who were there. Said it was the best atmosphere they've had at an English ground in years.
They were buzzing, and absolute credit to Crystal Palace League that's what they're bringing to the Premier League.
They seem to turn your man Bolasie and Gale when he came on into unplayable monsters.
Maybe just the fact that they were sitting on the bench absorbing all this and maybe looking at the pitch going, why aren't we fucking doing fuck all out there?
Yeah.
Like there was Palace players having cocktails like on the beach in Dubai, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. We didn't have to do an awful lot
in that first half.
All Liverpool did last night was what they did against Chelsea, just sort of kind of probe and push them back.
I genuinely thought we were a bit better than Chelsea. I thought we were a lot more patient. We didn't keep flinging the ball in across us.
No, we didn't need to. Like the reason we went, that frustration you seen in Chelsea is because it's exactly what it was. Chelsea had a better defensive outfit and it was harder to unlock them. Liverpool were able to just sort of play their normal game and just get the chances. And did lots of chances without doing an awful lot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the midfield wasn't great. The forwards weren't great. Suarez looked sick before the game, and put in an unbelievable shift.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Sturridge was quite good as he came into the game.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overall, it was just the sort of, you know, just go out there and do the job performance until
they didn't.
Yeah.
Mark,
what's sick about it is that the goals we concede are not sort of stereotypical Tony Pulis goals. Mm. You know, we get dead on a counter attack for one. You know, nice little bit of play down our right hand side and a cross in for the second one.
Yeah.
Right, the third one is a sort of, but it's not a hoof from their, you know, the edge of their area. They're in our half, and it's a, you know, a decent diagonal ball. So yeah, Pulis is almost out footballed us.
Yeah, yeah, but that's what really hurts him. It's these long passes, direct passes into feet that broke my heart. Yeah. Like, that should not be able to happen.
That wasn't a launch ball into the box someone to make a nuisance. That was a little chip into a bit of space. I mean, any team playing against Liverpool last night would have been playing them balls in.
Yeah, yeah. Mark, talk to me about Daniel Sturridge. Andy touching on it there. He started off, let's be honest, he looked a little bit lost. But as the game went on, instead of fading away and showing signs of injury or whatever, in fairness to the man, he did step it up really well.
Yeah, and it looked like he had found his touch again as the game went on. Things were bouncing off him, I think, a little bit last week and the last game. And maybe in the first, it was noticeable, I think I think it was very early on, he had a chance, the ball just came onto his left foot and I just screamed, hit it. And he kind of hesitated.
Mm.
And I think that just comes with confidence as a striker. And I think he was just really trying to get his rhythm again.
Mm.
But like you said, it did come into the game. But I mean,
He really tested out the L hamstring one stage there. I can't remember who it was, but he took someone on down
the right. Yeah, and cut in, yeah.
You know, like he really ran for it. And it seemed to grow into the game.
Keeper saves it, you know. Like I said, we had loads of chances last night in the first half. I think at times you can still see Sturridge and Suarez. At times you kind of think, oh, maybe the extra ball was on back to one of them there, and one of them will travel a hand up to one or the other. But at the same time, I mean, just put together all our goals this season, and there was just another two. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Last night, and the Suarez got a little ball from Sterling. It's what we've been good at.
Yeah.
And it was just, like I said earlier, it was unfortunate that 3-1 Coutinho got the chance, and I think we probably would have kicked on with Sturridge kind of up in his game as the game went on. It was noticeable, you know?
Yeah, for sure. On Luis Suarez, there was a lot of talk. I missed the immediate build up to the match, so I missed the talk about him being sick or whatever. But as Andy said, he did put in a hell of a shift, the kid, in fairness. Got his goal. It didn't seem like the Luis Suarez we know at the very, very pinnacle of his game, but you couldn't fault the man's effort. It was special.
No, you get the impression he kind of was trying to force it in the same way that Gerrard tried to force it against Chelsea at times. Like whenever he blazed it over the bar, it felt like he was just trying. He was just trying a little bit too much and needed to kind of reel it back a little bit. I mean, if he was sick, then he certainly played well through it, because he put in a typical Suarez performance where he plays extremely well without necessarily making it look like he's playing extremely well. You know, I mean, he just does a lot of linking play and brings a lot in together. And obviously, he got his goal and he's now matched the league record for goals over a 38-game season, which is, you know, obviously incredibly impressive. So, yeah, it was a good performance by him. I think he's kind of been out of form in the last kind of month, maybe. Obviously, you know, it's been a long season. He's been so good this season that you kind of expect his form to drop off at some point. And even then, his worst form is probably still makes him one of the best players in the league.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, as much as he got his goal and he did put in a very good performance, it's not quite the Suarez that we know he can be, but you know, I don't really, you couldn't put any, you know, fault or anything like that down today or down yesterday, because he did try so hard, and you could see at the end of the game obviously just how devastated he was that the result hadn't gone our way.
Yeah, for sure. Phil, I know you wanted to chat a little bit about the more general picture of Brendan's management of the game in terms of the substitutions and so on and the decisions in the game.
Yeah, it just boils back to what we were saying. Like, it's a collective thing. We got the last 20 minutes. We got probably nearly everything that we could do wrong. As I said, the substitution of Sterling to me, I think, is the turning point of the match. As I said, our midfield had probably run out of legs a bit at that stage, because that's when the gap started to open up, and he was making up for it. He was covering an awful lot of ground, and he was helping out Lucas and Johnson down that right-hand side. And when he goes off, you know, Coutinho was carrying a knock, we were told before the game, and he looked like a player that came on that was carrying a knock, because he wasn't covering the same level of ground as Sterling had done. And we know that Coutinho is capable of covering that ground and being, you know, a little angry ant getting around the pitch and making tackles and the whole lot. And they're just, you know, when that happens at 3-1 and even at 3-2 maybe, you know, I know the Brendan had Agger warming up ready to come on at 3-2, and we went then and scored the third goal, and you're just wondering, you know, if he doesn't make the Moses substitution, makes the Agger substitution there, he probably saves himself the 3 points. And I'm sure he's kicking himself over it as well. I'm sure he's thinking to himself, you know, maybe I should have just left Sterling and brought Coutinho on, or maybe took Lucas off at that point. And just to give that, you know, if I want to continue on the pitch, but because of the work rate Sterling was getting through. And I echo back to this. That game last night, it's a draw. We're top of the league. You know, it's a disappointment that we didn't win the game in the position that we were in. But fuck it, lads, we got a point. You know, we're going into the last day of the season with a chance to win the league. Yes, it's disappointing. Everyone picks themselves up. We're going to look at it and say, you know, let's finish this off the best way we can. He's done enough. Brendan Rodgers has done enough this season to earn fucking more plaudits than will be showered upon him for what he's achieved with the squad that he has. And to berate any player over last night, with the exception of a couple of players who are my favourites, berate Bud.
speaking of berating players, I'll let you come back to finish on a little high note in a minute. But professionals that you are around this table, you probably watched the match back. I couldn't watch it. I was sick. The remote control got broken and I walked out of the room. So what was that a good chance Victor Moses had, lads?
Ah, lads, come on.
Was it a good chance? I don't know. I can't remember.
The goalkeeper's out of the picture. He basically has an open goal from 5 yards out, so with the ball dropping at his feet, and he air kicked. Mm. Like, the ball gets in between his legs, and you know, if there's moments in a season that you look at, there'll be obviously some funny ones, but that one was just, you're just saying, ah, Jesus, fella, you're going to make up the difference for us here. This is going to be your hero moment. You know, that moment where, like,
a
McCabe incident for United when he was scoring those improbable goals, and he's never been seen of since, right? But you're just saying, oh, this is, no. And then it's up between his legs, and it doesn't bounce to anyone else. Then you're fancying that they're still going to put it in, but it just doesn't bounce to anyone. But, like, it's just something like that can happen, and it's so often that teams come off the back of such long winning runs that it isn't one game that they go down in; it's two games, because the nervousness that's built up after a loss that's happened after a long winning run can become a bit infective, right? And as I said, going into this game, I think genuinely had we won last night, as I said, all the different probabilities that goes into thing put the team on edge again. City go in tomorrow night. If City win or lose, as I said, I'd rather see City win or lose than draw the match tomorrow night, because City then have to win the last game of the season. Whereas if they don't, if they either drop the 3 points it's in their hands, or if they don't drop the 3 points, then they could well be complacent going into, well, when I say complacent, relatively complacent, thinking that they only need a draw to win the league effectively in terms of what it is, and we'll just go out to win the match because that's what we are. You know, we're born to win, and we want to make sure that we wrap up at least second place in the actual league, and, you know, start off in good stead. So do I want to get on Brendan Rodgers' back? No, because I don't think he made great in-game substitutions yesterday. I think he more or less alluded to it in his post-match press conference. Yeah. Is he allowed the odd wrong thing? Yes, because of all the good things he's done over the course of the season. Was I disappointed? Of course I was disappointed. But look, the big picture here, I keep saying it, we can still win this league. It's not over. There's only 27 games played.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that in mind, I suppose we start looking a little bit towards the future and the last match of the season. And our preview of Liverpool's final league match with Newcastle at Anfield. It's going to be a very, very interesting occasion. We're going to be there with our live event with Anfield Index, Carnage in the King Harry pub. So irrespective of what happens between City and Villa on Wednesday night, Liverpool will end the season with at least a mathematical chance of winning the league on the last day, and that's basically dreamland for anyone who's honest with themselves. So how does the team look for this monumental last day clash? Simon, what are you thinking in terms of the personnel on the pitch on the day?
I'd probably bring Henderson back into the team, even just because he kind of deserves to be there. He's been so significant for us this season. And I don't really think that Lucas has done enough to warrant keeping him out of the team now that Henderson's back. So I'd have Henderson back in the team, and you'd arguably start Coutinho, take Alan back out, because Alan and Henderson are quite similar. So we'd maybe need to take Alan out, put Coutinho back in, and play Sterling, Suarez, and Sturridge up top.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's maybe what I go for, and then obviously the back four is probably going to have to stay the same, because we've not really got any more options other than maybe, you know, playing Agger instead of Sakho, but I'm not really sure that would make any kind of noticeable benefit.
Jim, an interesting point that Simon touches on there. It doesn't really matter if we haven't had numerically a large amount of injuries over the course of the season in comparison to other squads, because we don't have the depth of other squads. So those injuries have taken their toll in exactly the same way as if as a bigger number would in a bigger squad. Would you see any difference, or would you have any, I know you have a fondness for Joe Allen, would you have any difference in your lineup for the last day?
Well, you're right what you say, Trev. I mean, effectively, we've got, 14 players, really, that can do anything in our first team?
Yeah.
So if you lose one or two, which we have done, you know, we've lost Sturridge. People forget we didn't have Suarez for, I think, the first six games, was it, this season?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking about Ags would be the best player in the league. And we've played 37 games. He's only played 31 of them. Me, personally, I've gone on record and said our best midfield three until at least the summer window is Gerrard, Henderson and Allen. So I think Allen keeps his place. Henderson comes in for Lucas. I think the back four stays the same. You could play Agger for Sakho as sort of his farewell game, but I don't want to advocate that because I don't want David Thomas, the other Welshman on the show, to get the ass for me. So
there's another lad raising his eyebrow here, just so you know. We'll come to that in a second.
So I'd probably go, I'd keep the back four as is. I don't think you can do anything else. Yeah. I don't think Newcastle are going to be bothered, are they? They've not been bothered since November time last year. So Allen keeps his place. Henderson comes in. You play the triple S up front, and you know, hopefully we win 4 or 5 nil.
Yeah, I won't go around everyone for this, but Andy, I saw a serious raised eyebrow there with the idea of an Agger farewell. How do you feel about that idea first, and then secondly, do you see any? Would you argue, or which of the two lads' 11s would you side with?
Just the only change I'd say would be Henderson in for Lucas. Other than that, it'd be the same. Like, it's hard. It's been hard to put an argument forward for why you should bring Agger in for Sakho.
Hmm.
But, you know, I don't think Sacco's done anything special that's really justified his place in the team. So it's either or for me. You know, I like Agger. He's had a bit of a disaster of a season. His farewell. I don't believe it's going to be his farewell. I mean, I think every player on the team has probably played their last game for Liverpool this season at some stage or another.
Yeah.
You know, probably Johnson this week. So we could do it on somebody every week. I think the team is just going to be as it was last night, except Lucas comes in for Henderson.
Yeah, fair enough. Mark, tell me, do you think, is it just about getting the 3 points and therefore, you know, registering that on the day and doing our best and saying, right, okay, what have you got to City? Or does the performance matter in the greater scheme of things and the season we've had and the fact that we will have a lot of strong players on the day?
I think for us, really, it goes hand in hand. If we're going to win the league, it's going to be a good performance. And especially with it being the last day at Anfield and with everything that's gone, In the last two games, I think as professional footballers, they'll look at it as an opportunity to go out and finish on a high.
Mm.
And it was like what Phil was saying earlier on, it's still on. It doesn't really matter what happens on Wednesday night because things can happen.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, this I touched on it earlier on, this kind of downbeat attitude towards this game, even at this stage, shouldn't be there because you have to have that belief, you know, but like they're the ones who have to go out and do it on the pitch.
Yeah,
they're the ones who have to go out and win the last game.
Yeah,
regardless of what happens, you know, that's, and I think it will go hand in hand. I think they'll win the game well.
Yeah,
and especially having Henderson back, I think he adds so much to the team because even touching on what Lucas, the way we're talking about Lucas, I mean, nothing, you know, bad against him, but a lot of our game is about keeping the ball and then retaining possession and kind of getting things going, but then also having the legs to be covering your defence. Yeah. And unfortunately, Lucas doesn't have either of them things that Henderson has in his game. And that's,
so that in itself will make a massive difference.
I think we've missed him, especially last night. Yeah. But that these things happen. Yeah. That, like I said earlier on, it's bad to be a football fan, you've highs and lows. Yeah. It's gone down to the last game and it goes hand in hand. Yeah. A win and a good performance. I think we'll get it.
That's a fair point that Mark makes, isn't it, Phil? That if you know, if we do win and we play our ball, it is going to be a good performance, one way or the other.
Yeah, and look, as I said, they want to give the fans the best send off they can, and I hope the fans, and I believe they will. They're going to, you know, light the pyro, get the party going before this game kicks off. It's going to be electric ahead of Anfield. This is going to be treated just like any of those big games that have happened recently in terms of welcoming the team in, the noise, the flags, the banners, the whole lot, right? Once we, the first thing, let's learn what we didn't learn from Crystal Palace. Get in and get the win. Doesn't matter what the goals are going to be. Let's just get the win and see what happens at the end of the game, because we can't control what happens in Manchester City's game. But what our lads can do is just make sure that they get the 3 points. Say thanks to the fans. Say thanks to themselves. More than anything, they owe themselves to go and win the game and win it with a bit of style. And I'm not saying 5-0, 6-0 or whatever. I'm just saying win it with the style that they've played the whole season in. The panache and the poetry emotion as we've come to know it over this season. Mm-hmm. You know, that Keep everything going into next season. Yes. Go in on a high again into next season. Yeah. To say, look, this isn't going to be just a one season. This is something that we've built here. This is something we're going to continue to build and continue to get better. And
Brendan likes to point out, doesn't he, that it actually started into January when he got his first two signings.
Storage and continue. Yeah. Yep.
And that he points to that as the start of things, doesn't he? You know, okay.
It's look, at the end of it all, right, it doesn't matter who goes out on the pitch ultimately on Sunday, right? I think Henderson will come back in, purely because going back to the way we play, he fits it perfectly. And that's not to take away from anyone that gets left out from. And as Andy said earlier on, Joe Allen brings the same qualities of the game in terms of how he moves the ball quickly. Coutinho can do the same thing when he's in that midfield as well. So if we're lining up to play our best football with the best players that we have to play that football, then Henderson comes back into the team. And that's no slight on anyone that's going to be left out of the team. I'm just talking about our best players playing our best football for our last game.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to say as well, like, I mean, when the summer comes and Liverpool aren't playing, we miss them terribly. You know,
yeah,
we don't
absolutely.
Know what to be doing. You're okay with the World Cup. It's never the same as a Liverpool fan for me. I don't really like international football as much. But, like, you know, everyone should just enjoy this occasion.
Yeah.
You know, as Phil says, they'll be the same welcome party. It's going to be the biggest welcome party, bigger than the Sunderland one, bigger than the City one, and bigger than the Chelsea one.
Yeah.
Any Liverpool fan anywhere in the UK is going to be at Anfield without a ticket, because there's a chance this is happening, and the place to be is Anfield, whether it's in the ground or around afterwards.
Yeah.
It's going to be a carnival atmosphere. It's going to be sensational, and anyone that's watching the game on telly or whatever, just enjoy it, because it's been an absolutely amazing season, and you know you're going to miss Liverpool until August.
Yeah, bloody sure, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just say, if you are watching the game on TV and you don't want to listen to those idiots on Sky, then myself and James Owens, Matt Levan, will be doing the commentary live from the pub, I think.
You are.
Look at you plugging. Look at you plugging yourself. Very nice. What's the event?
Let's get on that.
What's the event, Jim? Say that again. Sorry, I missed
what
that.
What is the event? That's a good question. Wait there, let me just pull it up. Yes, the event.
Jesus, lad, I teed you up there.
I'll edit this period.
Can you edit this bit in? There's Anfield Index and the Day Trippers Carnage at the Harry.
Good man, well done you.
And it'll feature commentary from myself and James Owens, and a live podcast from the Day Trippers lot afterwards.
Very good. We got there eventually. Thanks, Jim. That was brilliant.
How's your job, Trevor?
Yeah.
And how can people tune into this live?
fucking hell.
Follow Anfield Index on Twitter and they'll send you a link.
The only thing about this is, Jim, at least you're going to be kind of in some sort of semi-rational sober state, because you have to do the commentary on the match. The rest of us will be battling with our nerves waiting to do the podcast, and the bar is too close, isn't it, really? I'm kind of
nothing new then, will it?
No. Right, let's get some final predictions then for this. We could analyse Newcastle and their threats, but I really can't be honest.
Sleeping will be probably one of our main threats in the pitch.
So let's go. Simon, can you kick us off there with a prediction for the final score?
I think we will, as in, will we win?
And scoreline, mate.
I think we'll win. And I think we'll keep a clean sheet for the first time in a while. So I think it'll be 3-0. Lovely. And we're going to keep the 3-0 this time and not actually just piss it away.
Yeah, lovely, we'll take that.
Can you imagine the nerves if we're 3-0 up at 11 minutes to go? Ooh. Oh. Yeah, I know. Those 3-0s are dangerous score lines.
Fucking hell. Jim, prediction?
4-0. I think job done. I think we come out, start fast. They're not going to be arsed, are they? So 4-0, party atmosphere, and we'll see what happens at the Etihad.
Great stuff. Andy?
Yeah, I just don't see it any other way than us bashing the bollocks out of them. 4-5-0. That is me showing a complete disrespect.
I was going to say that. No disrespect to Newcastle. But
that's me, because they deserve nothing but disrespect for the carry on of that club over the last few years. So fuck them. We bashed them, and let's see what happens up the road. And you never know. The cop could be singing a rendition of "I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles" of West Ham do the business.
Mark, a shout for you from prediction.
Well, I'm gonna have to go 5-0 now, aren't I? So
one up matchup. Yeah, 5-0. I do have issues with this nil, lads. You're very confident with your fucking clean sheets. I don't see that. I think we win well, but I don't see a clean sheet, Phil.
I'm going with an 8-6 scoreline.
Yes, in favour of.
Don't know.
It doesn't really matter.
But the most important thing is West Ham 2, Manchester City 1, Andy Carroll with a double.
Fucking sweet. Right. Now,
champions!
I fucking hope so. Let's finish then with a little bit of crack. We'll answer some listeners' questions. The first one is from a mate of Andy's. I didn't get his name, Andy, in your text too, is it?
Oh, yeah. Ray Dickinson. He's not on Twitter. He's just a fan of the cast, and he texts in questions all the time.
Very good, very good. Well, Ray's question is, you have a few points before the match, and after 20 minutes you badly need a piss, so you go out, you hear a roar when you're in the Jacks, you return to find the Reds have scored a cracking goal. Are you chuffed or gutted? Phil?
The right answer is gutted, right?
Yeah.
Because let's be honest about it, when you've gone all the way to watch the game, especially with us, when you go over, right, and you go to the game, if you go out to the Jacks 20 minutes in and you hear the roar, you're left with two things in your head. If you're superstitious like myself, you say, do I just sit in the cubicle for the next 70 minutes?
exactly.
Or do I, you know, like, obviously you're chuffed a bit that we scored, and but you're dying then to see the replay of what the goal was actually like. Because you know what's going to happen? You're going to be sitting beside some of your mates or whatever, right? And I'm going to say, Jeez, you missed the great goal.
Yeah. But never mind live. Has that happened to anyone where they've gone and they've left the room and Liverpool have scored and they've had that thing Phil was talking about, fuck, will I stay here? Will I go back?
I had it for Gerrard's Olympiacos goal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was in the Jacks for that.
And
ran out with piss rolling down my leg. And I haven't experienced it. I'll be chuffed. So what?
Exactly.
Doesn't matter. You'll see it over and over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. Right, next one's from Darren. Darren says, if you were granted the opportunity to smack one famous person on the nose, who would it be and why, Jim?
Oh, Philip Schofield, I hate the fucker.
The most harmless man in the world.
I was going to say, is he not a very, very...
Oh, he just winds me right up.
Okay.
Standing. Oh, I can't watch a dancing programme. I can't watch The Cube. I just want to smack him around the head with the cube. Never mind fucking... And I'm a placid man. I don't know what it is about him. He just
winds you right up.
I can't stand the sight of him in his grey hair. Jesus.
That'll do nicely. Next one is from Connor. Connor asks, which sports journalist has the best Twitter game? And he says, why is it Rob Shepherd? So he's obviously a fan of Rob's. I can't say I'm particularly familiar with Rob. Who has, do you think, Si?
I don't really think any of them have got a particularly good Twitter game, to be perfectly honest.
That's probably a fair show.
I quite like Tony Evans, just for his kind of 1 a.m. ale-driven rants.
Tony's been on form lately, in fairness to him. He's come out with some incredible stuff. Yeah. So, Tony, for you, any other shouts around the table?
Best Twitter game.
Yeah.
It's going to be Indy, haven't it? Indy
Kalani. You're a tributing journalist then, are you?
Sure, he voted for the Footballer Writers.
Yeah, did you see that one? That one
is really, it is him, head and shoulders, but the rest, man.
Yeah. Right, next one is from Gray, and Gray says, you can only have one of these for the rest of your life, Phil Casey. Sex or football? Is it actually
from now?
Thinking
like,
about this,
from now.
Fucking no, from now. Yeah, okay, from now. guess whose wife isn't listening to this podcast? Fucking hell!
There's no way I'm answering that one. First time I'll be last.
I actually had this conversation when I was 16 with a mate of mine, and I actually chose football at the time because I really wanted to be a footballer. It's not fucking ridiculous. God bless me. If you had to, Gray also asked this one. If you had to live in a place which has a cheese named after it, this is very specific. Where would you live? Any shouts for this?
Easy Singles.
Oh yeah, I love that place. Fucking weather's great there.
Philadelphia, right?
Philadelphia, so get in.
No.
Mozzarella.
Can it not be an imaginary place?
There's no rules, mate. It's up to you. It's up to you.
The one I was going to go for is Buffalo, obviously, for the mozzarella.
Buffalo mozzarella, very good. That's quite clever. That's quite clever. I'll give you that one. Next one's from Paul. Paul says, what is your worst or your best school memory? Jim, you got one here?
I haven't really. I was school.
It's a long time ago, mate.
I had ginger hair, acne, braces. Fucking, it was brilliant.
So what? Your reflection is your school. Your school memory, fair play.
Yeah, it was horrendous. Yeah.
any other shouts around the table here for worst school memory?
Worst school memory.
Yeah.
No, best one was I concussed myself in a second round of a football match once by diving into the goalpost.
How is this good?
I got 2 days off school.
For fuck's sake.
I broke my arm playing Gaelic for the school and thought it was great for a week. Maths teacher made me learn myself how to write with my right hand.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's determination. Yeah. I admire that.
I knew you'd like that one.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
It was always good if a dog came into the school, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're fucking right, actually. Yeah, lads get very distracted by a dog walking in. Yeah,
anything like just
anything different at all.
Scraping a door or popping his nose in or
just fucking mighty crack. Yeah. Next one is from Sean. Sean is drawing on our questions about burritos, and you boys have an obsession with this kind of food. And he asks, Andy, what's the best cure for ring sting?
Never had it.
Yeah, but so you've got nothing to offer here?
No.
Thanks for that, mate. Fucking flat. Any other suggestions?
A swift exit.
Yeah, fair enough. Next one's from, I think, Noel Tiger Tracy on Twitter, and he says, what's your dream job? He reckons weather forecasters, because they do fuck all and they know fuck all, but they get paid, which is probably a bit harsh in weather forecasters, but not a bad shit. Anyone else dream job? Simon, what are you thinking?
Probably be Victor Moses, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. Any other shouts around the table here? Dream job?
Colin Pascoe. He's got the dream job.
Colin Pascoe, yeah. Shorts.
He's got the dream shorts.
He does, yeah.
He's got the dream legs.
And a dreamy haircut.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful wedge of hair.
I wouldn't say it's him though, he's huge.
I wouldn't take Colin on the road. You're fucking serious. That lad's going to slap you down.
There's a reason why Brendan has him with him.
Fucking right.
He's got his back.
Next one is from a new account on Twitter called @AnfieldStuff. I'm not really sure what this question means. Maybe Andy Young could help us out here. Would you rather watch a game of curling at the Winter Olympics or curl a shit in front of Roy Hodgson? I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that means, but strangely, I just, when I saw this, I don't know.
Familiar with that technique?
No. That would involve grubby hands. Like,
curl a shit. That'd be like having a shit like a Mr. Whippy. Like.
I presume that's where we're going with this.
I keep saying, I don't mind Roy, so like, I don't know what everyone's obsession is, like, I want the shit and Roy or...
You didn't actually say that, mate.
Okay, well, look, my reading was you do a Mr. Whippy and Roy Hodgson's face. Okay.
Yeah, moving on. What is an acceptable amount of time to spend on the bog, Mark? What do you think?
I thought you were going to go to Andy there again.
He's the shit man. Yeah. He's the shit man. Come on. Yeah.
Let's
it
tweak
5 minutes.
Let's tweak it. What's the longest you've spent, do you reckon?
Well, I've been in Liverpool all weekend, so yesterday could have been a goer.
Oh, I see.
Could have been 15 or 20 yesterday.
You know, Andy,
what song sums up our season for you? That's from Gary. Do you think of a song when you think of this season?
Was the Stone Roses, This Is The One, but...
It was up and low, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's a song.
Did you find yourself turning that on and going, fucking come on, did you?
No. I'm not a weirdo.
Yeah, I think you've proved quite contrary to that, haven't you? next one's from Paul, and Paul asks, which member of the Liverpool squad would you trust with the one ring, and who would be his Sam? I think this is a, what do you call it, question?
Lord of the Rings question.
I'm not an expert here, but Simon, who's the Frodo of the squad?
It's Jordan Henderson, isn't it?
Is it Jordan Henderson?
Trust anyone else?
And Sam's his mate, right, so who's that going to be?
Well, Sam Gamgee, it's got to be Iago Aspas. He just looks like his name would be Sam Gamgee.
Yeah. It's hard to argue with either of those two shouts, I think.
I'd probably have Joe Allen.
Nah, Joe Allen, yeah. Totally agree with you. Go-to guy in the squad.
Yeah,
as Frodo.
And he's utterly reliable, right? And he's also a bit small, like a hobbit.
Right.
Aspas got a look at the, what's his name, the little creature.
Gollum.
Gollum.
Gollum, that's it. Yeah, you got to look at the Gollum about him, Aspas, so I wouldn't trust him with a ring.
And for Joe Allen's Sam, I'd have to go to Jose Enrique. Because Sam sort of had to keep Frodo's spirits alive and keep him going, and Sam was always happy and picking him up and saying, come on, yeah. And Jose, when he's on Twitter, he's always got a big smile on his face. Even when they're at the Players Awards, he was the only one that was still smiling. He hasn't a breeze what's going on. Either him or Ali Sissoko. One of those two would be Sam.
What was remarkable about those shows in the Player Awards was that Jose Enrique had a top on.
Yeah, and he wasn't sitting on his bed with his brother with their tops off.
Yeah. Or his girlfriend.
Or whoever happened to be there with his top off. Okay, this one's from Ike. Good question. Ike says, I'm an American that loves LFC. Do any of you follow American sports teams? And if so, which ones?
I follow Seattle Reign ladies football side because my sister plays for them.
Damn good reason to follow.
That's a good show.
Anyone else?
I used to follow the Chicago Bears.
So did I, but that's back in the 70s.
Yeah, and
or 60s, was it?
And then the Chicago Bulls as well.
That's before America, surely.
1760s. I used to support the Brown Bears in the woods.
I did support the Bears in the 80s, or follow them, because it was big on Channel 4. It was class.
Yeah. Walter Payton was around the time.
The fridge and all that shit.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the first Super Bowl I remember.
That year, what was that, 85 or 6?
85, 86, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. That was, and it was on Channel 4 at the time?
It was, definitely.
Yeah, the Bears, even now, like, I don't pay much attention to American football, but you'd sort of look to see what the scores would be.
Would you watch this Super Bowl?
No, I watched it, like, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, but it just seems to go on for so long. There's so many ad breaks. It's very hard to watch.
I absolutely
I watch it just when it comes to Super Bowl. I won't watch the season, but when it comes to Super Bowl, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic sport to watch with a group of people. It's a bit tedious when you're on your own at home. But like, if you're in a pool watching that and the breaks, you can just talk about, you know, what's happening in the game, or talk shit for a while and then back to the game.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're watching football, you're just an unsociable bastard for the whole game.
Because you've got your back to everybody.
You're just staring at the screen. You don't drink your pint. You don't do nothing.
So it's the perfect drinker's sport, is what you're saying.
Yeah, excellent. It's brilliant for a social sport. And I can only imagine what it's like going to the games over there.
Good lad. The American football, fair play to them. So they've got our drinking sorted. Yeah. And that is us. Right. Okay, finally some admin. On Sunday, we're in Liverpool to be part of the last day celebrations by hosting our live event with Anfield Index. Carnage at the Harry is a free event. It'll feature live commentary from the AI lads and a live podcast afterwards from ourselves. Get yourself to the King Harry between 2:30 and 7:30 and be part of it. We'd love to see as many.
Carnage!
Fuck. That actually fucking scared the shit. Uh, We'd like to see as many of you as possible there. Thanks to the mighty Johnny Rep for a fantastic team as ever. And finally, our day trippers tonight were Cy Campbell, Jim Fishlock, Mark Keeley, and the young Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey.
Carnage!
All Brendan's fuck!
You box!
Sorry.